Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Vanderpump Villa has first-class luxury and world-class drama. Vanderpump Villa, a new reality show starring Lisa Vanderpump, just launched on Hulu. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside.
Meet the elite staff as they work, live, and play together 24/7 while dealing with rivalry, romance, and misadventures. As they try to provide once-in-a-lifetime experiences for their guests, the staff will need to meet Lisa's high standards. Not everyone has what it takes.
Watch new episodes of Vanderpump Villa every Monday, now on Hulu.
Oh my God. It's Carrie
and Lara,
and this is,
and we should, well, we do a little cold open.
Yeah,
I want to give them a little something,
some radical honesty about what has been happening. So we recorded this episode yesterday. Like, we're doing a new recording because we recorded an entire episode of Salty Utah Queens, like laughing Friday evening, like spirits were high. And then we both hung up and like went about our nights. And then around 10 p.m., Laura texted me and was like, "Hey, did you hit record on our episode, like on your side of the episode?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Okay, because the MP3 you sent me is completely blank." And then I went in and realized
straight line of no audio.
I didn't record. I not only was speaking to no one, I was like post nothing. I did an almost 2 hours of not recording. I was just talking to Laura for two, which is
Carrie,
fine with me, but it was like,
you embarked on like an art statement, mm-hmm, that was to not record a record. It was.
It's radical.
An artist. It's Enter the Void radical art.
Yeah.
You know everything you need to know. Like, you'll remember. What truly made me think. I was like, it was the kind of art that it's like, you don't need a recording because you were in the moment. So your memory will serve as the recording.
Right.
And my silence serves as your reflection, mm-hmm, on the memory of our recording and,
yeah,
what we were able to accomplish together. And you have your side, but you'll never know me. You'll never know my side.
You'll never know my side. And Laura threw out the option of maybe we should just release it and just my side talking to you. Like Laura is speaking into the void and I'm there. You were channeling, mm-hmm, through this, like, it was like Ouija board.
It was Ouija board. And I thought, like, it could really change the game of podcasting. Like, it could, we would disrupt podcasting as podcasting
social
is known.
Yeah.
Because think about listening to a podcast where it's just one person talking to nothing and then just like reacting.
Go, girl.
Like, I feel like that's like the next wave.
Maybe we'll just
podcasting.
Release it as like a B-side one day, just Laura literally talking to no one. It wasn't even me. Like, it was beyond me just not recording. It was me, like, it was like that space beyond nothing. That's where I was.
It was, because it was a recording, but it wasn't a recording of even silence. It was just nothing. Like, there was no sound involved, yet there was still, I still don't know how it happened. I will leave you, the artist. Like, I won't make you reveal your trade secrets.
I hit record, but something wasn't plugged in, so I was not picking up my mic. So I saw the red and was like, well, I guess it's, I should have known something was wrong when I didn't see, like, the, you know, heart monitor, like, Richter scale, like, sound picking up thing. And I was like, oh, it's red, it must be recording.
Something's out there. I trust it.
I'm pretty green when it comes to all this.
I love it. So we're navigating, like, basically I'm on the hunt for an editor. So if any of you out there feel like you have what it takes, the comedy editing chops to really elevate the pod, get in touch, sexyuniquepodcast@gmail.com. But so making moves towards that, I'm like, we both have to have autonomy over our own recordings.
Yeah.
And like elevate this shit. So it's been a little bit, and I have very basic knowledge, but I'm learning about Carrie's knowledge. And his artistic, honestly, and it's really a reckoning between his artistic tendencies and his knowledge. So we're merging them. And ultimately, it's all good.
It's all good. I'm admittedly, like, not very savvy about technology. I honestly think, like, my mom knows more about technology than I do.
That's cool for her.
My mom will, like, help me when I have something, like, on phones. Like, my mom will, like, guide me through stuff sometimes, which I'm like, wow. My mom, like, could have been, like, a tech queen.
She is your own personal genius bar.
She is. My mom...
Dorothy's genius bar.
My mom one time... Seeing my mom talk to an Apple genius is pretty fun. She doesn't get, like... She doesn't, like, freak... But, like, she just gets... She's very, like, real with them. And she's like, no, I don't know what that means. My mom goes, I didn't go to Apple school. My mom just says that. One time we were driving home. It's on my old phone. It's probably lost, but my mom was just like, I don't know why they talk to me. She's like, no, I'm sorry, I didn't go to computer school. Like, she went on this whole, like, monologue about, like, I'm sorry, I didn't go to computer school.
She had a rant. You basically did comedians in cars getting coffee.
Yes.
It was O'Donnell's and cars
getting Apple
driving
help.
Home from the mall.
Yeah. Hi, Tony.
Yeah, my mom and I have been FaceTiming throughout COVID. Yeah. But really we really started our FaceTime relationship during COVID, but she will sometimes just turn the camera around and it's like focused on like a blanket or something for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, she doesn't always get FaceTime, which I think that's, FaceTime's hard.
Some Apple interfaces are very difficult. Like GarageBand, what we're dealing with. Forget it. For fucking get it.
I love anyways, filming a chair while she's talking to you about life.
Like, it'll be like a blanket's kind of mushed up, and so it's just like a blur on the screen. Or she'll turn it to show me her cat, and then the cat will walk away, and then I'll just stare at the coffee table for like an hour.
Hey,
avant-garde.
It's avant-garde. But yeah. Anyway, I'm Carrie.
I'm Lara. And you're listening to
Apple
Sexy
Genius.
Apple Genius Stories.
Sexy
Unique Podcast.
Salty Utah Queens. This is like we're recreating yesterday, but hopefully it'll be better.
I think it'll be better. It can only improve.
It can only improve. From truly nothing.
From truly nothing to something will be an improvement.
It will.
I've found myself in the throat. Like, this is something I never foresaw myself being into, but I have a real fetish for financial dramas.
Okay. Like, are you watching Industry?
I'm watching Industry. I love it. I have no idea what they're saying most of the time about stocks and like graphs. And I'm,
are they British?
But I just eat it up. Some are British, some are American. It takes place in the UK.
I know it's Lena Dunham directed an episode. The premise is
yeah, she directed the pilot. But the premise is a bunch of interns have just been hired at this like high stakes, like top tier financial firm in the UK. And so it's following them over the course of their like internship to see who gets then hired as like a full time employee. So they're basically like the underlings in this like toxic, horrific culture, but like the cult where they can just make millions in a moment, like talking about trades. But I truly don't know anything. So my desire for just like stock market drama has now led me into the arms of billions on Showtime.
Oh.
And now I'm a full blown billions head. I'm like halfway through season one.
Right.
I also have, I really don't know what's going on.
Right.
A lot of the time, but I feel like I'm learning so much about stocks.
I know. Isn't like Malin Ackerman and Damian Lewis in that?
My queen. Yeah. My queen, Malin Ackerman, Damian Lewis from
Homeland.
Fucking Homeland. And Paul Giamatti.
Damian Lewis is hot.
Damian Lewis is hot.
In like a ghostly
way.
They
show his butt sometimes.
So what is it? Is it take place in the 80s?
No, it takes place in New York. Current day, or like within the last like 5 years, because the show's been on for like five seasons,
right?
And
billions.
And Damien Hirst plays like Bobby Axelrod. He's a...
Damien Hirst.
It's a wild because Damien Hirst is the star of the show. Damian Lewis plays Bobby Axelrod, and he is he's like a billionaire.
Film star. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a billionaire with his own financial firm.
Okay.
That does trades the stock market. I don't really know. It could be a hedge fund, like
private equity.
TBD. But he's like a billionaire with his own like office building that's all glass. And then Paul Giamatti is like the New York state attorney.
District attorney.
And like the district attorney. And so he is trying to like fucking come after Damian Lewis's character, Bobby, and like arrest him for insider trading. Mm. And so he's not a totally like clean guy. Like he has some conflicts of interest himself, but it's kind of this cat and mouse game that plays out. And then there's just like lots of sex and like quippy, like there's like drug moments, and it's like a billionaire lifestyle, but then high stakes trading of stocks, leverage your stocks and lend them to me and I'll trade them. And I'm like, whoa, I can't even conceive of being in this world. Like, this is such a left turn into oblivion from where I find myself in my life. So listen, it kind of is like, I can LARP as like, I'm like, what would my life have looked like if I had cared about math? Maybe
cold,
this.
Cold math.
True math and like statistics and just like like I feel like I could be like a stock market bitch just based on like gut feelings and speculations and like, because I think that's a lot of it.
Yeah, you have to be predictive.
Yeah, and I feel like I am kind of psychic, so now I'm like, I need to get into stocks. I need to create my own financial drama.
Yeah, get into a portfolio. Like,
what can I buy for $30?
Yeah, I feel like it was it seemed like Succession sort of usurped it. because it feels totally. Like it feels like a spiritual relative of Succession, and I think there's bad timing, but it looks interesting. The billboards in LA always made me laugh because it's just all these people being like,
yeah, it's insane.
It's one of those billboards where they don't know what to do, so they just like put like every lead actor in it, and they're just standing together like, it's like, what is the show about? We don't know. Billions is just like those kind of shows, like Billions, Succession. It's imagining that world is just challenging for me because I'm so mathematically challenged, and I see cold math, I see hell, and I see it's like devil's, it's like the devil's tool, like
it is the devil's tool.
Like
the
being
numbers
able to make that quick of money is like genie shit. It's like,
yeah,
you're
like
you're magic, being like, with a K. Magic.
You're fully sex magic.
Yeah.
When you are able to, even people that do like fast math where they can be like, oh, 84 times 70 is like, who knows? And then they can just
50.
Like,
yeah, I'm not even trying.
Yeah, where they can even like subtracting.
Oh,
that's the devil's magic. The only thing I can do is I know the multiplication table up to 12 times 12. And
I'm like, do I know that?
I know most
What's
of it.
What's 12 times 12? Four?
144.
Four? No, like I'm No. I'm like 2 times 2 is 4. So I was like,
okay. Love. What's 12 times 12? 4? Yes, 4.
Percent.
They should throw us in the stock market in the ring just to see what we do. Yeah. We could majorly like disrupt. What well, if we were
I was
like
telling
stock
you,
market savant.
I was telling you recently like the like when I took tests and stuff, like I was so bad at math, like but there would be moments where I would get F's. F's were flying at me like, you know, shrapnel. Like it was just coming at me. And there was one time, there were a few times where I took like a math test, like especially in high school, where I would be like just breezing through the work, like doing, you know, the declension or not declension, declining.
What declension.
That's Latin. The like divisions, like all this, the little bot, like
long
every
division,
long division, like and just
long
being
division.
Like coming up with these equations, just being like, whoa, like I was like, suddenly felt like I was struck by the lightning bolt of God and just being like, oh my God, this is my moment of like divination where I become a math person and I'm being blessed. And like, it's been so long coming, but finally I get math fully. And I would just be like, oh, this is amazing. It's not like the, doesn't seem like stuff I remember from studying last night, but like, or with my tutor, but this feels right. And then I,
but
would
it
get,
all makes sense
makes
in
sense.
That moment.
And
you're
then
just
I get
like,
the test
oh
back
God.
And I got like a 37.
Mm-hmm.
I would get like, I would actually get like 35% on like tests.
Same. All the time. From a very young age. Like I took that as a sign, like, let's not focus on this. Like, let's actually just switch focus into something else because like, it's just not meant to be. If I'm getting like a 30, I'm like, it's done. We're torched. Math is torched. And like, let's just focus on English. Words,
yeah,
reading, writing, the things that I'm actually excelling at, which I was in like the 99th percentile.
Me too.
Of like
I was
all that shit.
Here's the thing, you're so right. It was like I was, but I didn't get to that realization until college, really, that like writing, even though I was like I would be so, it was, it became all about math because it was like that's going to prevent me from getting into a good college. So like it just became all about math, even though along the way, starting in eighth grade or sixth grade, really, like my teachers would say, yes, he has a lot of challenges in math, but he's really good at writing. And like, I think he's going to be, and my parents and me, we'd be like, no, it must be about math. And it was like, I tried so hard to be good at math. It was very much like me trying to like be straight. Like I was just trying to fit it. I was like, this has to, like, it will work. Like I know in my heart that like something is not right here, but it will work. And I just could not do it, and I couldn't, much like I could not do math, and I just could not, like, and I tried so hard, even in high school, like, I was reading, like, especially, like, when I was, towards the end of high school, like, I had this one English teacher who was amazing, and, like, got me into, like, James Joyce, and, like, all the fucking, and I was, like, so into, like, Dubliners, and, like, having like my Dead Poet Society moment, but still being like, I have to be good at math. And it's like, what the fuck was I, what took me so long? You were ahead of the curve.
Well, I tried to tell everyone in my life, like, it wasn't going to happen. And, like, truly was just like, it can't, like, it cannot be.
It will not
be. But that didn't stop literally everyone, parents, teachers.
Me too.
From being like, you will do math.
You will be good at math.
You will try. And I was like,
no,
it's not going to fucking happen. And it made me hate math even more.
Me too.
And now, at age 36, I'm finally like, math could be kind of cool. Like, I could learn a thing or two. Like,
well, I think you're good at finances.
Well, that's taken a lot of.
Well, like, no, but I think you've reached a place where, like, you get lingo and, like, you understand.
I'm understanding
stuff.
More, and I'm open. I'm more open to it now, and have like a creative, like, because I see the seduction of math and numbers, and I'm open to it. But when I was younger, I was just like, fuck the fuck off. Like, stop making me do this shit. It really doesn't matter. Like,
see, I didn't, I wish
I'll
I
never learn.
I was just fully like traumatized. And I think I was just like, I was addicted to the drama and pain of math. And I like was addicted to
math,
like,
was your
failing.
Dark mistress.
It was, and I wanted so, like, I wanted it to work, and I wanted to be like, I didn't even want to be good at math, I just wanted to be passable, and I wanted to like be like just like everyone else, like average with math, like we're enough where I could like go, I could cruise through. But no, I've got this is how bad I am at math. So my junior year, there was a cheating scandal at my school where a bunch of kids in my... I was in, like, the remedial math class, like, just the normal one, and I was really struggling in that class. And a bunch of... Some kids bought, like... They somehow got a hand of the midterm, and all these kids...
Wow.
Someone broke into, like, the math department and stole a copy of the midterm, and they were, like, selling it for 20 a pop. And a bunch of kids bought it and were using it to study. And I didn't know about it, one. And then I saw that people were, like, before the test, like, I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be so hard. And then I saw someone was studying it, and I was like, hey, what is that? And he's like, oh, it's the test. And I was like, oh, can I, like, look at that really? Like, and right when I was about to look at it, like, the bell went off, and we went in, and I was like, fuck.
And I love your, it's 1 minute before the class where you're like, let me just look at that. And I think that was my approach to math too, which I was like, oh, I have 5 minutes and the test is about to start. Like, let me just see if I can like cram all this math knowledge into my brain. So,
and then the kid, like everyone got caught basically. Cause it was like I remember our teacher was like, guys, I'm a math teacher. Like, I'm going to know if there's a discrepancy in, like, you know, patterns. And
oh yeah, fuck, I forgot about that.
And I failed the midterm, and he gave me a D because he knew I clearly couldn't have cheated, so he gave me a D to pass me because he felt bad. That's how bad I was.
Yeah, I was pretty much at that level as well, like in my junior year of high school or senior year. Like, I was at my therapeutic boarding school, and my math teacher, Brad, was like...
Brad.
He... Because we called all our teachers by their first names. And I was in pre-calc, and I was just like, Brad, like, it's never going to happen. Like, I wish that I could give you, like, the math student that you deserve. But truly, it's
not going to happen.
Done. Like, it won't happen. And then Brad tried with me a little bit, and then he was like, you're failing. You have an F in this class. And I was like, Brad, please don't do this to me. Like, look where we are right now, and look all around us. Look what's happening. Like, I can't fail this class. Like, can you please just give me like a C, please? And he was like, okay.
I did that. Okay, yeah. My senior year, I took this class called, Symbolic Logic, and I thought my spring semester senior year, I was abroad and senior in the fall of senior year, and I did it over email to my advisor, and I was like, oh, that sounds like philosophy, just put that down.
Yeah, I'm like symbols. Emojis.
Yeah, it was fucking
wingdings.
Advanced calculus. Like it was like the logic of math, like math logic. And I realized that very quickly. And I like there was this nice guy who was 2 years below me, and he was tutoring me, and he was like really good at it. And I would meet him like once a week, and I would just be like, Alec, I don't get this. And he was just like, he would be like, yeah, you're really bad at this. And I was fully like I had a really good, I did really well in college, but I was failing this class. Like I had an F in my spring semester of senior, like I wouldn't be able to graduate. So I went up to him and I just said, I'm not failing. I'm graduating. I was like, you need to pass me. So he gave me a B. You just have to have a frank, be like, look, I'm not going to do this ever again. I'm not going to do math. I'm an English major. I won't have a job for probably 2 years after this, but please at least let me pass so I don't have to come
You're
back.
You're like, I'm an English major. I'm going to struggle recession. For the rest of my life. I'm going to be struggling.
There's like, a recession going on. It's 2011. We are in like the dregs of the recession. Can you give me a fucking... I was like, just give me a C. He gave me a B. But
yeah. That's a very gracious grade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Symbolic least... logic, like, fuck on off.
But I wish, I think it's cool that you had like the foresight to be like, I'm going to be a writer, a creative.
Yeah. Well, no, but yeah. I mean, I was the only one with that foresight, and it kind of, no one else was really like on board until I finally got like a book deal. Did anyone believe anything that I was doing?
Yeah.
But then it finally made sense years later. And now I'm like, now I'm open to the possibility of a romance with numbers.
You know what I say to that?
What?
Don't. Don't even.
It's going to be a heartbreaking endeavor.
It's going to be heartbreak. As one mathematically challenged person to the other. The first time someone ever complimented my writing was in sixth grade, and this kid came up to me on the playground. And I guess my teacher had read something I wrote to the other section as like, cause she thought it was like good. And I was mortified when I found out. And this kid came up to me and he was like, yeah, O'Donnell. He was like, the thing you wrote was really good. And I was like, thanks. He goes, it was really gay, but like good.
He knew he had your number.
And I was just like, thanks. And walked off. And I was like, to this day, one of the best compliments I've ever gotten.
That's a great compliment.
It was like real. Like he had to be like, it was really gay, but it was good.
Yeah, gay but good.
Gay,
that's kind of been
gay
your,
but good.
Your beat.
Yeah,
your beat.
Yeah,
this whole time.
I love that's the but.
Gay slash good. Yeah. I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Let's modernize it.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I think my first eighth grade was my moment where I was like, I'm a good writer. When it was like when I was put on a group project with two other people and I was like, they're clearly not going to cut it. And I was just like, I'm carrying the fuck out of this. Like, don't worry. I'm just going to do it.
Group
and
projects.
I will get us this A. And then I was like, pretty talented.
Group projects.
Group projects can go fuck themselves.
Hell. Mm-hmm. There's always a weak link.
Always. Sometimes you just have to take the reins.
Yeah.
Hopefully you don't find yourself in that situation professionally one day. Let's get into these
salty queens. We're on the second episode of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. I have to say, just going into it from the start, that I was not as impressed with this episode as the first one.
Same.
I think it was kind of a flop of an episode, but I'm going to give it the sophomore slump pass and just have faith that the next weeks will be even better. The first one, it was almost was so explosive and so jaw-dropping that it's not even fair to compare or like expect. But I did.
But it's hard when like it could be a Jersey season 3 scenario where they just like came out the gates with a brawl and then everything else is like Dame Newmont from there on out.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to keep the faith I'm willing to keep the faith in my Latter-day Saints and hope that they pull through in these troubled times.
Speaking of gay but good, there's an amazing, you know, there's like cringe gay movies from the early 2000s, late 90s that were all like independent and like gay, like Adam and Steve and like,
yeah.
There's this one movie called Latter-day that I think I've mentioned. It's like the base. I feel like it was the inspiration for Lisa Vanderpump. It's about Jacqueline Bisset is in it, and it's about this like party boy bartender at a hot West Hollywood restaurant who is like sleeps around and is just like living the gay life. And then this runaway ex-Mormon from Utah starts working there as the busboy, and he's really cute, and they have like they fall in love, and like,
oh my god,
and Jacqueline Bisset's like the mother of the restaurant, and she's like boys, and there's like hot gay sex, and then the Mormon gets sent to conversion therapy, and like it's just it's this whole and
what?
It's wild movie. It's so it's very melodramatic, but it's amazing, and it feels
that's
very
absolutely Vanderpump.
It's
rules.
Totally Vanderpump rules. She's like, boys.
Also, just intervene with like a side combo about VPR, which is that fucking, okay, Danica, there was an update. Friend of the pod, Jamie Stein, sent me an update about Danica and old Brett. And okay, I just have to tell you, it's from like an Instagram post that he sent me from iReal Housewives. Danica Dow's ex-boyfriend, Brett Willis, avoided criminal charges after he admitted that he broke into her home in the middle of the night, cut a lot of her clothes, and stole her iPhone, according to a report from TMZ. Danica originally reported the incident to law enforcement, but the outlet learned that the LA County DA's office will not file charges against Willis.
Jackie Lacey, Willis, go.
Jackie Lacey must go. Danica's on the front lines of the Jackie Lacey must go resistance. My God. Brett also returned. Oh, wait. Willis avoided charges after he offered to pay for the damages and Dow accepted the offer. Brett also returned her iPhone, which he said he grabbed by mistake because it looked like his, which the DA's office decided not to charge him. As for Brett, he told the outlet he cooperated with law enforcement and is relieved to close this chapter of his life. However, the pair's restraining order against each other remains in effect. The exes both have upcoming court dates to address the restraining orders. Wow. Okay, why the fuck was this not a storyline?
Why were we deprived of hot old Brett?
The fucking old Vanderpump Rules, like Vanguard Vanderpump Rules, would have provided, like, this would have been central drama in the new season. Like, can you imagine if that had happened between Jax and Stassi, like, in the early episodes? Like, what the fuck? Like, who do they think they are? I think truly they were like, we're not trashy anymore. We're aspirational, darling. And then it's like, no, know your roots and know where your bread is fucking buttered.
Brett and Danica are the scum that we needed. Like, they're the, they're total, like, that's crazy.
Messy queens.
Messy, like, relation where someone breaks in. And also, like, I
messy
love
West Hollywood drama of cutting up, like, your H&M clothes.
Cutting up your lady significant others. That is unhinged and, like, completely something that only would happen on Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah, and stealing your phone, but then thinking like
that harkens back to like Kristen Doughty saying that James Kennedy's mom like stole her credit card.
Yes, this is like
bank,
that is a
robbed
messy
the bank.
Relationship.
Didn't she rob a bank?
No, she might. I don't know, but she definitely stole Kristen's credit card and went and got Botox with it. Which is honestly a power move and something I would want to do. Botox ain't cheap. Kristen was like, she charged $400 for the Botox onto my credit card. But yeah, I'm like, this is the problem.
Can I be really honest?
Yeah, I think I know what you're going to say.
I followed you what?
I think I feel say it, but I feel like I know what you're going to say.
What?
Brett is hot?
No. Well, yeah, but I followed him on Instagram, and I recently unfollowed him because he posted some pro, kind of vaguely pro-cop thing, and I couldn't tolerate it. But he posted something, and I wrote, and I think I responded to his, one of his stories with, like, a flame reaction. Which is really,
of old Brett? Of old Brett Willis?
Yeah.
Okay, wait, but him being like pro cop is definitely
he.
Like,
I don't know if it
maybe why he got off. Yeah, of the charges.
The LA. Well, thank God they got rid of Jackie Lacey, and they're having. You know, there's definitely some reformation, but the DA in LA, like they were. I think they refused to. Didn't she also refuse to go after someone else? That was like
the yoga guy,
the fucking yoga guy, the Bikram.
Yeah, she Jackie would Lacey would not press charges. Bikram. Like,
they don't. They are very cool with.
What does Bikram know about Jackie Lacey?
Yeah, I mean, no, they just like they are. If it comes to like rational
celebrity,
or like if it comes to like violence or murder or like racial injustice, like the LA, like Jackie Lacey was like, sorry, I will not be helping that.
She's like, not my problem.
If it comes to like domestic
actually
violence,
very much yeah. is your problem.
Yeah, no, sorry, he gets a pass.
Listen, if someone came into your house and cut up all your clothes, I would be really upset
that's
about that.
Deranged.
That's wild.
Like, that's so vindictive and evil.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be one thing if he, like, it'd almost be more less creepy if he, like, just stole her iPhone. But he broke in and cut up her clothes?
I know. I just am, if any producers are listening right now, hey, but also shame on you. Shame on you. For not exploiting this toxic relationship for all it was worth.
No, you made us.
And now you're getting karmically what you deserve, which is no Vanderpump Rules filming right now and everything on hold.
You forced us to watch Stassi and Bo and Jackson and Brittany in their fucking house.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. I want Brett. Yeah, I want old Brett and Danica's like. Toxic
brawling, shoving. I want Danica shoving old Brett, filing restraining orders, heading downtown with her lawyers, and like discovering that her clothes have been cut up.
I want to see photos of Danica like being discussed on the show of her leaving court, like in a smart pantsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And old Brett.
I want Danica
like
and old Brett's journey, like front and center, and for you to not give that to us. Now I'm filing a restraining order against Bravo.
Me too.
I'm going to file a restraining order against the producers of Vanderpump Rules.
I'm filing
a restraining order on behalf of the cat. I'm going to restrain them from interacting with the cast members who are truly not worth
ones.
Our television time and funnel them into the ones that are, like Danica and old Brett.
I'm also filing a restraining order against Danica and old Brett. Because I'm afraid of that.
Because I don't want them to come for me.
Don't come for me. But I want to watch you.
Yeah, I want to watch you do your thing. I'm team both of you. Separately and together. Whatever's better.
Probably,
or worse.
Probably separately.
For your life.
They're probably better not being together. But I would like to see it go down on TV. But anyway, mm-hmm. That is a missed opportunity on Bravo's part.
Yeah.
Bravo, you can't let us down. You can't let us down with that, and you cannot let us down with Salty Queens. We need the Mormon ladies, our Tough Tabernacles, to fully come into their own this season. So this episode finds, you know, it's like the shaky landing after such a bumpy ride in episode one. But we come up on Jen and Mary post fight at Meredith's quote-unquote birthday party that Jen's hosting at her chalet that may or may not be rented. And Jen has stormed into the bathroom and is crying. And she has a few friends consoling her. And then Heather comes in to help kind of bring her back.
Yeah. And Heather's taking her back. Jen is mostly, I think, upset over Mary's flip-flopping from being like, I didn't say that. Come over here. Did I say that? Yeah, I said it.
Yeah, like, I think Jen is shaken.
She can't take the flip-flop either, and I understand. Like, that would drive me crazy.
It's not. She keeps saying it's about the hospital comment, but I think it's less. It's not. It's like not about the pasta. It's like about. It's about her being terrified of Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Mary's ability to just go from day to night in the blink of an eye is fairly peerless.
I think Mary may be a ghost.
Maybe.
Because
she looked like one tonight.
When you get the full scope of her outfit, like, they'd start talking shit. Jen's like, her damn Christmas tree dress. She's walking around here. And then Heather goes, it's a loofah dress. And then you see Mary, and it's not like the outfit. I thought at first I was like, oh, I love this. But then when you got the full picture, I was like, you're unhinged for this.
Well, they left out the big reveal of her white tights and platform Mary Janes.
She has the Carrie Bradshaw, like, Manolo Blahnik Mary Janes from the Vogue episode, a white pair of tights, which is shocking on a older, it's shocking on a woman over the age of six.
She looks like Baby Jane.
Whatever happened to Baby Jane. With then her purse, I think it was the purse for me that really threw off this outfit, because it was kind of like a sporty, more like casual, ready to wear vibe. And she was serving us couture. And I was like, it's not adding up. You're looking crazy. Like, I'm scared, but also titillated.
Michael Cuby, who's a really awesome person to follow on Twitter, but he said he's like, how did she make Off the Runway Valentino look terrible? I think it was Valentino.
It was Valentino.
Yeah.
Mary let us know.
Oh, I didn't.
Thank you. It's Valentino.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh,
someone
I didn't hear
was
that.
Like, it was in the episode, the first episode where someone sat down and they were like, I love your dress. She's like, it's Valentino.
Oh, I must have blocked that out. But she looked absolutely insane.
She looked a little crumpled.
Yeah.
Yeah. She looked like someone had rolled her up in a ball and rolled her down the hill. And then she rolled into the red carpet step and repeat and rolled into the living room.
She looks
and
like a, she looks like a Bed Bath and Beyond, like a Bed and Bath, or Crate and Barrel, like shower sponge.
Yeah. It's like it's very loofah. Mm-hmm. And you hear Heather trying to like talk Jen off a cliff, and Jen is like, I let her into my circle and this is what I get. And Heather goes, it's a privilege to be in your circle.
Yeah, Heather, you can tell Heather is kind of over. She thinks both of them are being ridiculous. Like, she also thinks Jen is taking it too far, and she's like, okay, this needs, in her confessional, she's like, I just kind of need to yes and her, and then like get her to stop, because I think Heather knows how to handle Jen when she's upset, which is just to, like, coddle her and tell her that she's amazing.
Yeah.
It's easier just to smooth
things
over.
Some people, you just have to do that.
Yeah, it's true.
It's an honor and a privilege, you say to them. And then they shut up, finally.
And then Mary wanders into the room, and you see her outside the bathroom, and she hears the commotion going on in there, and you just hear Mary go, Jen? Hello?
Jen?
Like, playing it off like, what's going on? Which is also unhinged.
Mary lives in several different realities at once. Mm-hmm. Like, she'll tap into one and then it will be too much and she'll tap out. And the reality that she's tapped into now is like, oh, Jen's upset. I wonder what could have possibly happened.
Yeah, what was that about?
But then she taps it. She comes into the bathroom and then she taps into a reality of like needing to share her odor gland journey with the world at large, and monologues about how she quote, all her glands removed and ended up in the hospital for 30 days.
She had 12 surgeries. Yeah, she really doubles down and she's like, look, I'm really sorry about the hospital thing. I didn't say you smelled like a hospital. I said it smells like a hospital. Which I was like, okay. And she's like, that smell, I can't. And then she goes, oh. And then in her confessional, her eyes cross. She goes, Mary and her whole posse smelled like hospital. And you find out that, yes, she came down with something and had to end up getting all of her odor glands removed. So it took 12 surgeries. And like Laura said, it was 30 days of her in the hospital. And we were like, both trying to figure out really what was the, like, what would be the catalyst for that. And then you found out that it was something, she developed like boils.
Yeah. So basically, she said that she had an autoimmune disease, which caused her body to attack her odor glands. And when they attack them, they cause big boils. Mm. So I was getting boils everywhere. So my doctor suggested I remove all the odor glands, which feels very like biblical plague adjacent.
The 11th plague is Mary.
Yeah. Boils always take me right to a place of biblical plague.
Yeah.
Mary apologizes. Then she just switches into another reality where she's now going to be apologetic. And she goes, I'm sorry if I hurt you. I would never try. I did not mean to hurt you. I never try to hurt you.
I would never want to hurt you.
She's really Kelly Ben Simone mm-hmm. in that moment.
She's like a
denial of reality in general.
She goes, can we hug it out? Come on. And then Jen is just like frozen in complete confusion.
Jen wasn't ready. Jen's not ready for Mary's jelly.
No. And she says something like, I'm watching Mary. Like, I know she's full of shit, but I'm going to play it off like I forgive her. So Jen and Mary are going to have shit all season.
Yeah. I'm ready.
Me too.
Whitney approaches Lisa mm-hmm. and she goes, Whitney goes, hey, how have you been? And Lisa goes, crazy busy.
Yeah. So Sundance is coming up. This is pre-COVID times. I think this is around Christmas. So, you know, Sundance is in January, right? So I think mm-hmm. she's ready. You know, as the queen of Sundance, it's upon them soon. So she's been all over the place. And then Whitney brings up that Lisa supplied Whitney's vow renewal with her husband, the party, with like enough tequila for 500 people, according to Lisa, and two of the company's like on hand bartenders. So they send like, they have their own catering service. So she sent mm-hmm. two of her bartenders to bartend the wedding. And Whitney, she's like, they said they had a lot of fun, Lisa says. And then Whitney goes, yeah, they had a lot of fun. You should ask them how it went. And we find out that Whitney, according to her, they trashed the place. They got hammered on the vodka and the tequila. And then they went into her husband's Irish whiskey. And we go to a flash of her house. And there's like one area that has a little bit of broken glass.
Mm-hmm. And Whitney's cleaning up. And she's like, it's just such a mess.
It's such a mess. My God, my new house, my brand new house.
And Lisa's not having this feedback.
No.
She is like, I gave you this as a gift, and this is what you're going to say? Like, no, I don't think so.
And Whitney's like, they went into all of our top shelf tequila. And then Lisa goes, hold on. My company, our tequila is top shelf tequila. And then Whitney goes,
Beta tequila is top shelf tequila.
And Whitney goes, no, I'm talking about tequila that's not from America. And Lisa's like, oh, and that does not sit well.
No, you don't say that to Lisa. She owns three tequila brands that she considers. I love that in her mind, it's top shelf.
Yeah, you probably heard of our companies. No, I haven't.
I've never heard of them, literally ever.
So she is slowly...
Lisa leaves. She's gotta go.
She tells Meredith on her way out, she's like, I'm not going to sit here and listen to her lie about and like, spread slander about my company. And she walks down the red carpet and flips off the party.
Yeah, she says, I don't want trash telling me that my business is not good. It's like, wow, you just escalated things.
Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp? Or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine? That's where Canopy's new filtered shower head comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended this unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement, unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use the code SEXYUNIQUE at checkout to save an additional 10% off their Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you. So then the next day, it's a new day in Salt Lake City, mm-hmm. and Whitney has taken to the pole.
Yeah, Whitney's doing a quick little pole workout before the eyes of her 9-year-old daughter, Bobby.
And truly, Bobby is an old soul. Like, yeah. Bobby is down to clown, and I'm, like, ready to slip her my number so that we can just, like, hang out and hobnob because she has the maturity level of, like, a fellow mid-30s queen.
She said something like, where, like, what did she say? Like, where were you when
she was
I needed
like, what
you?
Have you been up? What have you been up to? And when I've been missing out on all that, like, she was very, she's giving me Miranda from yeah. Sex and the City. Like, she's quippy but smart.
Yeah, she kind of says, like, basically, like, who are you? Like, she's just,
yeah,
like,
what have I been missing out on?
Yeah, what have
on?
I been like, missing out on?
This is what you've gotten up to. I was like, Bobby, you're
hilarious.
Hilarious. Come yeah. over.
She's so cute. And so Whitney's just, you know, working off the drama from the night before. And then we cut to Jen and she's getting her place cleaned. The chalet is being cleaned. The Shaw mm-hmm. chalet.
Jen loves a Swiffer moment. Mm-hmm. I think Jen believes that Swiffers solve everyone's problems.
I do too.
She feels empowered by a Swiffer, like when in the last episode when she's just like Swiffering in her little heel, her little booties. Mm-hmm. And then she just gives all of her staff Swiffers yeah. and is like, do your thing. Like everything will be fine if everyone's Swiffering.
She claims that her husband, Sharif, has no idea that she threw this massive party for Meredith. He comes in and he's like, wow, looks like you have a lot of help cleaning up this little girl's night. And she's like, ha, 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 ha. Just a few of us. And I think it's part of their, I feel like it's part of their, like, role play.
Yeah, I think their role play is, like, she's role playing as though they own this house, which I'm pretty sure they don't. It's like, someone was saying it's a rental just for filming. Mm-hmm. And then their, like, silly couple's role play is, like, can't let the husband know that the wife is throwing parties while he's gone. But I'm like, I think everyone just knows everything.
Yeah, and so it's going to be on camera.
Why so. Don't, yeah, just abandon this and, like, let's move on yeah. to a different role play.
I don't want to be
this
privy.
This isn't working for me.
I honestly don't want to be privy for anyone, any couple's, like, you know, foreplay like
if
that.
You can yeah like if you can do a convincing if you can convince me as a viewer that you're really this is like an actual secret that you're hiding and like you have the acting abilities to pull that off, then by all means go for it.
Yeah,
but I don't think that they do.
No.
For this particular like the throwing parties at the house role play, so mm-hmm. I'm like figure out a different try again
yeah.
is what I would tell them if I was their acting teacher. I'd give them a new scene
Yeah, it's like
this. And then I'd be like, you just got your lips done and he doesn't know. Go. Who, me?
I don't get it. So that's like a quick little like glimpse into the Shaw house. And then we go over to Lisa.
Yeah. Lisa is still furious from Whitney's blasphemous claims about her business.
Yeah.
And she takes her husband into their weird living room where they have no furniture. And I can't decide if it's by choice or like they've just moved into this house. Like, I'm really unclear on their living space.
Okay. Here's my theory about, I mean, it's not really a theory. I think it's confirmed that they do this, but I think a lot of these shows still do the thing where they'll like rent a home and like pretend that they live there.
Who else did that?
I think they've done it. I think they've done it on other Housewives.
Oh, okay.
I think they do it sometimes in like reality shows. Like they'll rent a house and like make it seem like they live there.
That makes sense. Like I get why you would do that, but at the same time,
I mean, this place looks bare. It's bare. It's barren. It's very. It's kind of unsettling.
Really unsettling.
She's on like it a giant. Like what is that? Like a foot.
An ottoman or
giant
something?
Giant ottoman that looks like kind of...
They have like one couch and one ottoman in like a room that looks like... I'm thrown by this.
Yeah, I was a little chintzy.
And I would just rather see your house. Like...
Yeah. It looked like an ottoman in like the dressing room at like Rue 21 or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not loving it.
Yeah.
But Lisa sits her husband down and then just talks at him for...
hours.
45 minutes. Yeah. Literally 4.5 hours went by as mm-hmm. she relayed the ins and outs of this Whitney story mm-hmm. and like what she thought and what Whitney thought and what's going on and what it all means. And her husband, I can't tell if he's just extremely awkward with a camera crew or if he truly has been beaten into submission by his wife.
I know I'm like the great defender of her husband, but like I really
boned up for.
I want to sit on him. But I, I do, and that's fine. I feel like he's low key funny.
Okay,
that's my theory. Because at one point he goes, yes, you're so generous always. Like he says things that are like kind of vaguely trolly her.
Yeah, he's a little bit trolly, but then after she has talked, he waits a beat and he goes, do you want listening or feedback?
That's why I think he's funny.
Okay.
And she goes, stop.
I just want to tell the story. She goes, I just want to tell the story.
The story.
I know that you don't like Lisa, but I kind of love her because she is a mean girl.
No, I'm coming around to liking
and her. I like to watch a mean girl at play. She thinks very highly of herself.
Yeah, I guess I like that for that, and she's going to cause drama, but, like, I just want her... She needs to... As long as she's, like, plays the villain and doesn't try to... Because if she tries... If I don't think she's, like, nice enough to be, like, the audience proxy.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think Heather is the audience
Heather
proxy,
or, like, Meredith.
Sure.
But I feel like she needs to just be the villain, which is cool.
Yeah, she seems to be... I think she's going to unwittingly just become the villain because she's having villainous behavior. So I pray to my Latter-day Saints that she
leans into
that and accepts it.
I just don't like
the Queen of Sundance.
Her haughtiness at Heather and Whitney and their family.
Do you think it's motivated
by religion?
Think it's,
I think it's like a weird, like, kind of threatened by their Mormon, like, they'll always have something over her kind of thing. That's my theory. Because she's a convert
is just like striving to be at the level that they were just born into.
Yeah.
And that they've like rejected it and it's
like,
now an
like,
affront to her
you?
Mormon sensibilities.
Yes, that's what I think.
Okay. That's what Whitney thinks too.
I agree.
Because then Heather and Whitney go shopping for ski boots and Heather is reeling from Lisa blowing her off at the party. She goes, good, good, how are you? Oh my God, good. And then.
A good. And then Whitney is like, yeah, well, I had shit with her too. And she says that they talk after their kind of tense convo at Meredith's party. Lisa and her talked on the phone, and apparently Lisa threatened to release rumors that she has been holding on to about Whitney and her husband, that they're swingers, or as Whitney says, swingers. Very Whitney Port.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Whitney has that. She has the like vocal lilt and fry of a Hills character.
Yeah.
So, and it is very like a Whitney Port vocal tendency, so, which I loved the way and still love the way that Whitney Port talks.
Jeans are ruining my life.
I remember watching The Hills and just being like, I've never heard someone speak like this in my life, and I wish that I spoke like this.
Also, her in The City. Incredible.
Yeah, incredible. The City, which gave us Olivia Palermo. Ugh. Now we can't get rid of her if we try.
I know. She's here to
stay. I feel like every time I open up Daily Mail, it's Olivia Palermo this. And I'm like, I've never asked.
No one asked for this.
No one asked for this.
Cassie David truly, and Olivia Palermo.
But Cassie David and Olivia Palermo. So Whitney kind of gives us a glimpse into how she broke off from like her Mormonism, or like how she began to question her Mormon faith, which is she grew up being a good little Mormon girl and did everything that the church told her to do. And then when she was in high school, she had a beer and fooled around with her boyfriend and then didn't feel guilty about it and questioned everything.
Which I was like, real.
Welcome to the jungle. Yeah.
She like went to third base with her boyfriend and like drank Coronas and was like, mm-hmm. Whoa.
Was like, that was great.
Cool. And I didn't die.
Yeah, nothing bad happened. I love like waiting to get like struck down or feel like being mm-hmm. like, when is it gonna? And then being like,
I appreciate
maybe
Whitney's.
They're lying to me.
I appreciate her honesty.
Yeah, me too. And I do like her. She does this little dance during her like intro that's like very like, it's classic white girl mm-hmm. dancing.
Yeah.
That makes me feel warm and fuzzy towards her.
Yeah, she's very honest in this episode. Like, so the next scene, we have Whitney at her house and she's making dinner for her kids, and then her dad comes over, and her dad, Steve, right?
Looks
literally is Diane Warren. His hair is full Joyce DeWitt Diane Warren, like coming in strong, and almost looks like he's wearing like a toupee or something. Like it's kind of an unbelievable hairdo.
It's an unbelievable, and we did not even cover Steve in the last episode.
Well, he had a brief moment, stole the show.
He stole the show and stole my heart. And I, in this moment where he finally comes in to talk to Whitney, I was like, they're showing kind of throwback photos of the family and like what Steve used to look like, which was maybe kind of bald. And I was like, what happened to Steve to warrant this transformation from like bald Mormon daddy to like rock star?
Maybe he,
and it turns out
he got a wig, or
I think it's a wig.
Yeah. And he,
or I mean, I don't know.
So we find out that her dad is sober. He's in recovery from painkillers, and he really mm-hmm. has struggled over the last 10 years with his addiction. And Whitney's whole
and
family,
he's lost everything.
And he was self-made millionaire. He owned like a chain of hair salons and owned a hair school and had a line of hair product.
Literally Chaz Dean.
He was the Chaz Dean of Salt Lake City, and he was the Mormon, like the Mormon hair guy of Utah. And
he was Mormon Chaz Dean. I feel like I wouldn't put it past Chaz Dean to have something to do with Steve's downfall.
Yeah. He incepted.
Like Chaz Dean intercepted like a drink, or I could see like them being at like a hair conference.
Yeah. And this
and
like
Chaz
kind of like
Steve.
Salt of the earth Utah Mormon guy is getting all this buzz, and everyone's like, oh, he's like the darling of the conference. And Chaz Dean being like, I will destroy him.
Chaz Dean was like, I don't think so. And then he came into the bathroom while Steve is just like finishing up a pee, and Steve is like, kind of rubbed his neck and was like, oh, my neck kind of sore. And he's like, you know, it's great for that.
Pills.
Chaz Dean said, Percocet. And then gave him like, then dosed him. And then I feel like investigate Chaz Dean.
He's like, hey, got any pills? And Steve's like, no. And he's like, I do.
You want one?
And he's like, sure.
Sure.
Anything
to make your neck feel real good.
Oh my God. They were at some sad conference in like Central California or something.
Yeah. Like in Bakersfield.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love Steve. I'm glad he's getting help and I want him to reopen his salon and dethrone Chaz Dean once and for all.
Well, Whitney reveals that their whole family turned their back on him when he lost, because he got a divorce from his wife because of it. He basically was all alone and the only person in the family who would help him was Whitney, because I guess they sort of looked down on him in their faith for having addiction. So Whitney was really the only one that walked through this with him, which I think is really cool. And sounds like she's in some kind of program for,
She might be in like Al-Anon
She seems a little Al-Anon-y.
I love that for them.
I'm curious about Steve. I feel like it's kind of rare. I feel like it's rare to be a Mormon hairdresser.
But you know what? There are some hairdressers that have big dick energy.
That's true.
That are straight. Like,
oh yeah, no, I'm not. I was thinking maybe he was gay, but I think he is straight. It's just interesting that he kind of chose. Like, I feel like just from what we've seen and what we know of like this kind of culture, it seems like a radical departure.
Yeah,
which is cool.
But I feel like Mormons and some Mormon listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it's like, they're like, whatever you do is fine. You better just like excel at it and fucking rock the house.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
It doesn't, you better just like kill it. And if you fuck up, we hate you. It's your fucking fault. You're a weakling and like, we're not on your team anymore.
And that sounds like that's what happened.
Yeah. Whitney is saying that they view addiction as like a weakness, and that if you're addicted, it's just because of your own shitty life choices. It's like, damn, that's like fucking harsh.
But then Whitney goes, I go from being like, oh, Whitney really gets it, to her being like, mm-mm. Because she says that she invites her dad to come with her to Mary's church. So red I'm flag. Like, red flag. This is how they get you.
This is going from like one cult, which is Mormonism, to basically another, which is Mary's like
Pentecostal.
Mary is the vanguard or prefect of her own NXIVM-esque vibe.
Yeah.
I was like, Whitney's too prime to get like sucked into this. Yeah.
They're both
nonsense.
I feel like they're both prime candidates because he's sort of lost and she's like broken off from something else. So it's like there's something in her that's maybe innately drawn to that.
They're looking for answers.
Basically,
that's a dangerous place to be.
To avoid, just don't have any need for answers, and you won't be sucked into a cult.
When you are truly curious and looking for answers, I encourage you to just close your eyes and look within, because the answer lies in you.
Yes,
always has, always will.
Close the shades for a second.
Breathe in, breathe out, and ask yourself, what is the answer? And you will tell yourself.
Go into the darkness.
You may not like what you hear,
yeah,
but that is your answer.
Take a trip into the
literally
darkness.
Literally no one else has them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we cut to Heather's,
Seth and Meredith.
Oh, Beth and Meredith. Oh, yeah. So Seth and Meredith head to a place that looks like the Capital Girl called Handle. And she's wearing like truly monstrous outfit that I.
You called it her Sea Org outfit.
She's wearing like full Sea Org. She's wearing shoulder pads with like medallion, like studs on them that represent like badges of honor.
Captain Morgan.
We need a Scientologist housewife.
Oh, please.
We need that. And maybe the next iteration of Beverly Hills will have that.
Mm-hmm. Or they could do a Florida. They could do like Real Housewives of Clearwater.
Oh, fuck.
We need another either reboot of Housewives of Miami, which I didn't watch, but I know has like a big following. Real Housewives of Palm Beach. Real Housewives of
Philadelphia. Yeah,
Clearwater. Philadelphia.
They'll never do Philadelphia because Grace Kelly's niece didn't want to do it.
They need to do, I don't know why. I know why, because they already had like a property being developed in Oklahoma City, but they need to do a Real Housewives of Oklahoma
City. I would love that.
Because I'm sure that, and they could call it, this is a free idea, Bravo.
Ro-KC.
You could call it the Real OC.
Or Ro-KC.
Oklahoma City. Yeah, Ro-KC would truly kill. And I know that you could find people. I could help you find people.
Call us.
So call us. Let me know.
555-2... No.
I know about the country clubs.
We.
That's all.
Laura knows about the ice sculptures. That's all I'm going to say.
I know about ice sculptures and centerpieces and who gathers around them. Text me.
Yeah, so Seth and Meredith are having a little date night, and Seth looks hot, I think. And Meredith and him sit down, and he goes, "You look really pretty tonight." And she looks at him, and she stares at him for a second lovingly and goes, "Thank you." And he goes, "I really appreciate the eye contact tonight." So we already know that they're in some heavy couples counseling, because that's some stuff, like, that's like homework they probably have to make eye contact. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Well, where else would my eyes be?" And he says, "On your phone."
Ooh.
And then we learn very casually that they're separated, fully, yeah, like living separate lives. And that's what we were suspecting was going to happen. But now we confirm that it's already happened.
And now we know.
And now we know.
So Seth and Meredith, I guess, met at 23, married at 24, and had a baby at 25.
Yeah.
So they've been at it for a while.
They have.
And like most marriages, it seems to have run its course. And now they are fully living separate lives, but kind of keeping it a secret, but also not, because they're filming a reality show and talking about it. So Seth is like, who knows that we're separated? Mm. Like, what's going on? He says in their like talking heads interview, he's like, "I'm not dating anyone. I sure as hell hope Meredith isn't dating anyone." And she kind of just like rolls her eyes.
So this kind of confirms that, like, or not confirms, but it hints that it's sort of the opposite of what we were thinking, that he has like another family. It seems it might be the fact that Meredith has her own thing going on, because he asks to look at her phone, or he says, "Look, you can, I will give you my phone now and you can go through all my messages and I would not be nervous." And he goes, "And I can't say the same about you."
And she's
like,
she,
"I don't need to," she's like, "I don't need to do that. I don't need to give you my phone. That's nonsense.
I don't want it." I think something tells me that his act, like, I just don't trust his act. I think he probably is also seen someone, or
yeah,
has gotten
true.
Some on the side, but then is like, would also be jealous if she was yeah. doing it too.
Like true pig behavior.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like, you're both separated. Like, you're allowed to fuck other people, I guess. Unless you've
yeah.
both decided that you're not. Like,
I could
but
see,
maybe
I think that's probably the case. Like, I think he seems very possessive, mm-hmm. but like, we'll jump at the chance of getting his like dick sucked by someone.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I could hook up with Seth.
And if Meredith wants to go and like have an emotional affair with someone over text message, like, let her.
Because, so be it.
Because maybe Seth, you should have been home for her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
instead
Seth
of being having your gay son just spread thousands of rose petals all over the living room, mm-hmm. that then someone had to clean up, just littering
yeah.
in her personal space.
Wait, also I need
maybe
to
you just should have
there was
been
a
home.
Back of the in the party scene last week or in the beginning of this episode, there was some moments when Brooks and Mary were talking to each other,
mm-hmm.
like in the background. They were in this like intense conversation, and I was like, "What are they talking about?"
Yeah, what are they talking about?
Because Mary seemed like really like into talking to him, and was like seemed really sweet with him, and I was like, "What's going on?"
We need more cameras on Brooks, and we need way more cameras on Mary. I want to know every conversation she's having with anyone. Like, that should be the focal point of any scene.
Is she constantly courting people to join her temple?
And if not, like, what are the just the regular day-to-day combos?
Yeah.
Like, I want to see her getting her FedEx package.
Okay, yeah. So Seth and Meredith have their tent shit, and then we cut to the next morning. Heather's, like, trying on helmets for skiing in her house, and she looks really happy and excited, and we're really understanding how much Heather loves to ski.
She's a real ski bunny.
She's a ski head.
Mm-hmm.
No one loves the slopes more than Heather. And she and Meredith FaceTime and have this, like, kind of fake FaceTime conversation that's really weird. And they decide to get a girls' trip for Thursday to go skiing for, like, a day.
Oh, yeah. They've like, set up a ski day for everyone to, like, hit the slopes together. So, like, we cut to the moment that all the ladies have, like, arrived to the slopes to, like, embark on their ski journey. Mm-hmm. And Mary is late because she was waiting on a FedEx package, which was her coat that she's wearing to the ski day arrive.
A Chanel coat.
Queen.
She looks,
that's queen shit.
She looks incredible. She has this giant Russian hat on. She looks amazing.
Mm-hmm. She brought her best outfits.
Yeah.
To lay in the snow.
And I was thinking, like, I get that, because when you are waiting for a package that you really need, like, life is on pause.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Wells Fargo wagon from Music Man. You just You need what you need. So she arrives late to the chalet or the lodge. They all get their stuff going. Whitney's snowboarding.
Yeah, Whitney's like a cool snowboarding gal. I can't relate. I've never snowboarded in my life.
Me neither. Heather,
it seems like an absolute recipe for a broken bone.
Totally.
For me personally.
Me too. Skiing is terrifying.
Skiing's terrifying. I'm a traditionalist. Like, if I'm going to hit the slopes, I will ski, but I will ski completely out of control. Like, I don't know how to really, I kind of know how to turn, but sometimes the ski just straight down the hill takes over and I will barrel at 45 miles an hour until I inevitably fall.
It's frightening.
Yeah. Like, the last time I went skiing, I told this on our deleted Void episode, but I'll tell it again. I truly lost all control on the slopes, was going like it's a bat out of hell down the side of a mountain, then fully just cartwheeled over, fell, lost both of my skis, both of my poles, flew just like head over heels, fell, slid 100 feet, and came to a stop in front of like a small family that was just like taking a break on the side of the mountain. And they were like, are you well? Like, have you survived? Is your neck broken? Like, what is happening? Cause it was truly a jackass level wipeout.
Yeah.
And I was fine, but I had cheated death in that moment.
The mountain was trying.
The mountain took me and it told me we could have killed you today, but we let you live. We let you live. So now you're dismiss yourself from the slope and go drink a beer in the lodge. And we don't want to see you again. And I said, okay, sir.
Yeah, skiing. I was okay at it when I was a kid. And then I think growing up, I just got more fearful. And the last time I went I was like really terrible.
I'm horrible.
My friend was snowboarding and she like almost slid off the side of the mountain and it was just like very scary. And I'm happy for people that just feel the thrill of like wind burn and the wind whipping at their faces as they like love that for you. Just meet me in the lodge.
Yeah.
I'll be drinking a seltzer.
I'd like to get good at skiing again. Like, I could see, like, I would have to invest a lot of time, money, and energy into lessons and equipment. And then, like, I would have to take a lot of lessons before I really felt comfortable. Because I just stopped. I have not skied since that wipeout and, like, wouldn't feel comfortable doing it again. It was the warning from the gods. But, like, I would need to have so much training before I felt truly comfortable and hot on the slopes. And I'm jealous of people that manage to be like hot, sporty slopers. Cause I literally look like Brian Dennehy when I put on like a
yeah, I look unwell when I'm working out.
No, it's not. It's like
some
not.
Some people look
it's
hot.
No, not gonna happen.
And like there are people who are like great. They have like flushed face, like just looking fresh as fuck on the slopes. And mm-hmm. I'm sweaty. I have to pee, and I like feel very out of my element and uncomfortable.
Yeah, my hair turns into a frizz with like a pancake dreadlock. It's a frizz all around the crown and then just one pancake dreadlock braid at the nape of my neck. I'm like sweaty. My face bloats up to like twice its normal size and I'm just literally a ball.
And you walk into the lodge like you're like at a 45 degree angle leaning forward because your shoes
are like... Yeah, like how do people even walk? You're just like...
You look like I feel like Sigourney Weaver in Aliens and like that giant alien robot thing, just being like,
I'm a clunky jabberwocky with a dread, just sweating.
A rogue dread
that will take at least 10 minutes to brush out at the end of the day.
Yeah, I'm
just like a sweaty, ruddy mess.
It's bad.
And meanwhile, everyone else is like, a ponytail, my ski leggings, hit the powder.
Yeah. So Lisa, Mary, and Jen, they all look the best, but they are the least skilled, and they hit the bunny slopes for some lessons. And we see Mary ends up doing snow angels
mm-hmm.
with her skis off, which I'm like, I get.
Mary is not, like, I feel like Mary's always mentally skiing.
Yeah.
So she doesn't
Mary's
need
downhill
to actually,
at all times.
Yeah, it's a constant hurdle towards oblivion for her. So the actual act of skiing won't do anything for her.
Lisa's like, Sundance is coming up. I can't have a broken bone. I have to be on my feet. So I'm like, all right, fair. Business.
That's a responsible business lady decision.
Mm-hmm. And Jen's just not. Jen had a ski lesson the day before in her home with all of her staff clapping for her, going, go downhill, go downhill, go down, go down, go downhill. And then we see her skiing around like various high heels that they set up as like barriers that she has to ski around. And it's extremely Vanguard moment.
Mm-hmm. All her friends, which might just be paid assistants.
Yeah, she pays her friends, which is fine.
It's fine. You gotta do what you gotta do.
You gotta do it. Kylie does it. Some people just do it.
Put them on the payroll. If you can afford it. I mean, if I was Kylie, I'd probably put all my friends on the payroll, too.
Me, too.
You have the money. Yeah. Might as well, I guess. Just
go downhill. Go downhill.
Go downhill.
Go down.
Go down. Go down. Go downhill. You'd be a great go downhill chanter.
Me, too. I would.
You get creative with your chants. You love a chant to clap moment.
I do. It's the
and
swim
you're
team captain
super
in me.
Supportive.
Yeah.
Jen, if you're listening, hi, and you want to come to LA and you need
me.
A chanter, Carrie is available.
Hire me.
I
Heather
loved,
is so Heather's like, we're gonna hit the slopes now. And she like runs up to the top of the mountain. She's like, isn't it great? She's like, the powder here is unlike anything. The powder, and she's gloating about Utah's powder and how it's the best in the world and just the way it cuts. There's nothing like it on Earth. And I'm like, okay, need to lower the intensity about skiing.
Yeah, I've never had like a successful powder interaction.
Yeah, I always sink.
Like, I sink and then just fall over like a tree. Yeah. Like I've never been able to navigate my way through powder. I truly can't wrap my head around people who can.
Yeah.
So Heather I don't relate.
Is,
like I
Heather is skiing like she's at a monster truck route. Like she is at a full she's at 300 out of 100. Like she is I would be so if I was on a ski trip with her, I would be so like overwhelmed and stressed by her.
She's going to try and make you go on the powder, go on a black diamond.
Yeah.
And then you're going to end up crying and like sliding down the mountain on your butt.
She would like shove me in the chest and be like, come on, let's do this. And I'd be like, oh God. And
you ready to get off when the lift, like you'd be on the lift with her and she's like, you ready?
You ready? It's almost there. It's almost there. You're going to put your skis up.
Which is truly so stressful when you're trying to dismount the lift without falling on your face.
That's horrifying.
Oh my God. I just remembered the last time I was skiing when the lift was coming to scoop me. I looked behind me and it just hit me in the face and almost... I got full lift punched in the face and then was just like, oh my God. Like, it bonked me right in the head. I am not meant to ski. Literally every...
Skis? I think people who are good at... I have such respect for people who are just able to do it and pull it off and be, like, nimble and swift. But I feel like skiing for me in my adult life, the few times I've done it, has been, like, I feel just super vulnerable and, like... It feels like I'm at every step, something's gonna happen to me. Like, it's
you're tempting fate. It's the devil's playground.
But just like you getting like that would happen to me too. Just getting like whacked by something and just being like, oh,
just beamed
and imagining in front of what other that looks
in
like.
Line, and then having, but not only getting like just bonked more in the face, but then having to sit down and be swept off up a mountain afterwards to ski down it.
But
true nightmare scenario. How did I survive that?
And then people see, like, whatever. Like,
they're like, oh, there's that girl that just got a lift to the head all day. Like, me, then they see me in the powder, like,
yeah, you keep seeing the same people. You keep seeing the same people on the mount. Like, whenever you ski, you see,
when you identify just that one freak and then you're like always laughing at them, I feel like I'm the person that they're like, oh my God, there's lift head girl. And it's me either truly hurtling down the side of a mountain jackass style or trying to turn in the powder and just continually falling over.
And then there's always the people on the ski who are just like, a lot of the snowboarders especially, who just lay after they fall. And you're like, have to like, you're skiing down and there's people just laying because they've like fallen and they're just hanging.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be like, oh, please move. Please.
It's a zero sum game for me.
And then like, if you say anything, the snowboarders, you know that they'll be like, that person has no chill.
Yeah.
That skier is an amateur and he has no chill.
I don't know the etiquette, and I'm afraid for my safety of myself and others once I hit the slope.
Me too.
I need an instructor to hold my hand.
Heather is shaming the gals in the bunny hill. Like, she just keeps making fun of them for being so bad at skiing, and I'm like, okay.
That's classic skier hierarchy, too. I feel like they all love to shame.
Ugh. See you.
Have fun on the bunny hill. Go up in the lift. I don't want to be assaulted by a lift and then swept up a mountain.
I feel like one time I was on a ski lift,
risk my life and ski down.
I feel like I was on one of like the rickety chair ski lifts once. I swear to God this happened, and it was low enough where it was only like 8 feet at one point, and some guy like jumped off and started skiing.
Probably.
And I was just like, or maybe it was a little higher, but he like fully just like opened the thing and he was like some guy with his girlfriend and he like was like, he looked down and then was like, I'm going to go. And he just jumped off. And I was just like,
some people I feel like get dropped out of like helicopters onto like mountains to ski. It's like fun to watch. Love to watch it. We love to see it. Don't love to live it.
No.
Barely can live it.
At one point on top of the mountain, Meredith, Heather and Whitney have a little powwow and they talk about Whitney and Lisa's kind of tumultuous friendship. And we get a shot of, we cut to an unseen clip from months earlier where Lisa insults Whitney's outfit and says that she looks like a woman from Utah and that her and Meredith are going to have to help her with her style choices. Mm-hmm. So Whitney's just like, I feel like she's really condescending to me and treats me like I'm beneath her. And Meredith is very much on this Lisa's side and says that she's looks at Whitney like a big sister and she shouldn't take it personally. And that she always comes with kindness, acts from kindness.
Which is categorically untrue.
So then
it's unkind to say someone's trash.
Yeah. it's, well, so then we cut to later in the night and they're having, going to have dinner before they head back, and the lodge is closed, but they have the cafeteria. They open it up for the girls and they sit down for dinner. Mary is still wearing her big Russian hat, which I love. Mm-hmm. And, there's tension. There's a stiff chill in the air.
And there's lots of other women around, yeah, which I wanted to know more about. There's literally like four other people.
Someone named Dre, Dre, this random blonde woman, and I think she's Heather's friend. She's at the end of the table and she goes, "Ugh, this place looks cool." And no one says
Dre,
anything.
Dre, ever the positive.
Mm-hmm.
The positive force that the girls from Utah need.
So they start talking and Whitney mentions that her dad and her are going to go to Mary's church, and Mary's like, yeah, they're really excited and it's gonna be fun.
Mm-hmm. And then they kind of, Whitney kind of confronts Lisa, but then also doesn't. She does it in a very roundabout way where she's like, yeah, and it's great, like, I'm excited to be around a non-judgmental space, and I just have to ask, like, why do we even judge each other? And then it's clear that she's angling for an answer.
She, like, looks at
answer.
Lisa.
Yeah. Why do we?
And Lisa's like...
And Lisa just stares at her, blinking. Mm-hmm. Power move.
Yeah, she's like, what? And then they start talking about their kind of tension. And
Mary kind of swoops in to moderate this discussion.
Well, at one point, Whitney's like, never mind. And then... Lisa starts talking, then Mary goes, well, I want to hear what happened, Mary.
I want to know. Please, I want to know.
Go ahead.
And then it all culminates with Lisa going, I don't judge you. I don't care enough to judge you. And Mary goes, oh my goodness.
Mary goes,
oh my goodness.
She goes, oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
And everyone's like, looks appalled by that. And then Heather makes this a very funny face. Like, she just kind of just like goes like, ugh. And she goes, well, that's not a nice thing to say.
That's not coming from kindness.
That's not coming from kindness, Lisa. And then Heather takes this opportunity to go in on Lisa, mm-hmm, about their own drama.
So they basically, Heather knew that Lisa was talking shit about her. And then Lisa texted her to be like, did you talk to so-and-so?
Well, Lisa obviously knew that Jen told Heather that Lisa was shit-talking her, so the night before the party...
Saying, I love the shit-talking is that you might have flashed someone.
Yeah, well, that's
Utah. You can't even graduate from college if you've ever flashed a single soul.
Yeah, so Jen, the night before Jen's party, Lisa texted Heather and just bluntly went, hey, did you talk to Jen? And Heather goes, yeah, I did. And then Lisa goes, okay, cool. See you at the party tomorrow. And she sent her a thumbs up back. And Lisa was very put off by the thumbs up.
Yeah.
So they
Lisa
were like,
considers a thumbs up to be the equivalent of saying, fuck you.
Which I kind of get, because I think liking someone's text is totally fine and measured. But if you send someone a thumbs up, that's chilling.
It's passive aggressive.
Yeah.
Borderline on simply aggressive.
It's like, And I just love that Lisa texted her, went out of her way to text her, someone to confirm with them that they knew that they were talking about them.
Yeah. Lisa talked shit about Heather, then was like, you know that I talk shit about you, right? And then Heather's like, yeah. And then she's like, cool, see you tomorrow. Then Heather sends a thumbs up text, and then Lisa is actually like, wait, fuck you for that.
Lisa goes,
don't diminish the thumbs up text.
Don't diminish it. Also, I love that Lisa is like, has been saying that she doesn't know Heather and she's like never really talked to her or met her, but she has her number and they text.
Yeah.
So she's fully. And then Heather's
she's
like,
a liar.
She's like, why would you say that you don't know me when we literally knew each other? And you said I was also like a floozy in college. And you said I flashed people. And Lisa's like, she goes, I wouldn't have been able to graduate Brigham Young University if I showed people my tits. And then Lisa goes, well, that's why it was funny that you did it. And it's like, no, that didn't happen. So it's clear that Lisa's a liar.
Yeah, she's a take accountability for nothing ass bitch. She's like, the kind of person that you are like, hey, what you said about me really was hurtful and I need you to know that. And then she would be like, well, actually, maybe you need to look at why you're so hurt by it, because I didn't mean anything hurtful by it. So that's on you.
Yeah.
Like, truly will try and turn it around on you when you're just like, no, actually.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see more of that behavior, because that makes for good drama.
No, I'm excited. So it ends on a very tense note.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
I want to hear, Mary, what did you mean by that? I want
to
hear that.
Were you, and then what did you mean when you said that to her?
I just, like, Mary's like, I don't know what, she's somewhere else.
Mary, occasionally she's like, to James Lipton inside the actor's studio mode.
Yeah, she's just like, I want to know what you,
and then when you said that,
tell me about,
well, where's that coming from? He's like, tell me about that.
Tell me about Boogie Nights. And then the whole audience applauds, and Julianne Moore just kind of looks out, nods. It's like that.
Yeah.
Same vibe.
Oh,
tell me about,
my goodness.
Oh my goodness. Oh my.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
So,
it was,
yeah,
very Dale. Like, oh my goodness.
It's extreme Dale.
Oh my goodness.
Mary's kind of a shapeshifter. She's one to watch, honestly.
She is a,
get cameras on her at all times.
She is a rising star. Let me tell you, so far she's the reason to watch.
Mm-hmm. She's who I'm tuning in for. Brooks is who I'm tuning in for. Meredith and Seth's relationship, tuning in for that.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa denying any sort of responsibility for anything she does.
Damn, we also had last night, really quick, we had a full discussion about which of these women we think believe in that dinosaurs existed.
Okay, yeah, because I was like,
we started talking about, like,
reeling.
We started talking about, like, hardcore religious people, like Mary, like Pentecostal Bible thumpers, evangelicals, who, and possibly Mormons, who don't think, like, science, like, they only believe the world is like 5,000 years old, and they don't think, they don't believe that dinosaurs existed. Because Laura, well, you brought up, you were like, someone recent, they've recently discovered, like, basically, like, intact Tyrannosaurus Rex with, like, skin still on it.
There was a Tyrannosaurus Rex that, and a Triceratops that got in a fight, and then they were preserved in and found recently in Montana, and have just been bought by a museum in North Carolina. And it's going to be so exciting for scientists to, like, look at them, because some of their skin is still preserved, so they can just, like, learn so much about their biology that they've never been able to learn before. And anytime I read about that kind of stuff, I just think to myself, wow, there are thousands, if not millions of people that don't even believe in time. So I don't know. Yeah, they're like, time. I do not believe it in that myth of, like, they think that the earth is 6,000 years old. Like, creationists essentially believe the earth is only a few thousand years old, and anything beyond that, I guess, is false.
Yeah. And, like,
I don't know what, or they think that it happened within that 6,000 year period.
Yeah. I don't.
So
they think, so we were trying to decide, like, which of these women believes in dinosaurs. Mary is off the table. She totally doesn't. She is fully in the Bible, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Mary does not believe in dinosaurs.
Heather and Whitney, because they're excommunicated, they're sort of, or like lapsed Mormon, they're sort of like on the fringe, but I think they were innately don't believe that they exist. So, like, they might be open to the idea that they're real, but deep down they know in their gut that dinosaurs are not real.
You think Mary, or you think Heather and Whitney, yeah, think that they're not real?
Like, secretly.
Yeah. They have doubts.
They have let's just say they have doubts.
We'll just say they have doubts.
They don't go full. They've now come out. Yeah.
They've come out on the side of being like, sure, dinosaurs, yes, like, I sign off on them. But deep down inside, they still,
there's
not,
a prick
not
of,
so sure.
Lisa, because she's kind of a recent convert, like, she probably grew up thinking they were real, but now that she's, like, trying to strive for Mormon perfectionism and is, like, very hardcore and, like, judges other people and is really trying to, like, be the best Mormon, I can see her pretending to not believe.
She's now in a state of denial,
mm-hmm.
where she knows that they're real, but like she has to deny it for mm-hmm. her religious beliefs, and yeah. she's going to try and brainwash herself into believing that they don't exist.
Meredith, of course.
Yeah, Meredith, she knows all about dinosaurs and is like, there's no questions in my mind.
Brooks doesn't believe in dinosaurs.
No. Brooks thinks anyone over the age of 25 is a dinosaur.
Yeah, he's like, dinosaurs? Disgusting. Old.
Disgusting. Old people.
Gross.
MySpace users.
Friendster.
LiveJournal.
Oh, bring me back. Zanga. and then Jen doesn't know about dinosaurs.
Yeah, Jen's like, what are they?
Yeah. I mean, Jen thought you can get AIDS.
Not in my universe. Jen just thinks that you can become a dinosaur if you don't maintain your appearance
yeah.
at all costs.
You will transform.
She's not wrong. Yeah.
That's true. She's
okay, wait. Young Earth creationism, they are the ones that believe the age of the universe is less than 10,000 years old.
Oh my God.
Guys.
Listen, teach their own, but that is, with it's, that,
yeah,
that
it's
is
the
not,
young Earth.
To that I say no.
Mm-hmm.
Young Earth theory.
Yeah, I'm a young Earth creationist, which they believe the Earth is less than 10,000 years old and was reshaped by the global flood.
Young Earth. And don't they give believe Earth that much credit. The Earth is not.
The age of the
I
Earth
just said
universe
Earth.
Is. Don't give the Earth. Don't do the Earth like that.
I'm so young. I'm like the youngest person here.
We're literally so fucking young, guys.
Yeah. Earth. I do not subscribe to Young Earth.
Young Earth.
A place of Earth.
I love that.
I come from a place
really...
of Earth. Young, mm-hmm. and that's, oh my God, Place of Earth is Young Earth. So it's like Young Earth put together.
Yeah.
So
a place of Earth.
A place of Earth.
I've been dying to go to the Creation Museum, which is in Kentucky. And
oh.
that is where that's a whole museum just dedicated to Young Earth.
Is that the one the giant arc?
No, that's a different museum that is like the literal recreation of Noah's Ark.
I want to go to that shit.
I want to go to that shit too. Because I want to see how they packed every single species into that place and how they made it work.
You believe in Noah's Ark?
Show me.
Okay.
I mean, I grew up with all this shit.
Yeah.
So like, I want to see how they like reconcile everything.
Well, they did. This is weird. They did find, I used to have this book about like mysteries of the world when I was a kid. And they found, I think on Mount Ararat in Turkey or Armenia, mm-hmm. like on the border, they found the outline of a ship apparently on the side of when that's where Noah was supposed to have landed.
Yeah, and like I think that there probably is some truth to those tales, but I think much like the Greek gods and goddesses or like Roman gods and goddesses, it's more of like an explanation.
Yeah.
For like
I mean,
the
maybe
world
there was just like
in
a flood in this area.
Yeah, and like a way to reconcile that and bring meaning out of it for like larger questions of life. I don't think that a flood overtook the entire globe. And the only person that survived was a man and his ark. With every species of animal, insect. Like, you're not, like, no.
Earth.
Sorry. Earth. Yeah, so the young Earth creationist believes, this creation museum believes the Earth is approximately 6,000 years old.
Oh my God.
I'm dying to go.
The Earth, 6,000 years ago, people had like wheels 6,000 years ago.
Yeah.
People were like fully like riding around in cars 6,000 years ago. Truly. People like they were advanced 6,000 years ago.
Yeah, like weren't the Egyptians like 6,000 years
yeah,
ago?
Yeah, the Egyptians had like full like cars. Like they were like the Egyptians were like flying. Like people are so stupid.
I'm dying.
Earth. If there's any young Earth believers out there, make yourself known and let us know.
The young Earth component of any the podcast listeners. Sorry if we're offending you, like, let us in on what you know.
We'll try to hear you out. But I would love the Yurther contingent of the sup readers to make yourself known.
I really need COVID to end so I can go straight to the Young Earth, to the Creationist Museum and the fucking Ark. Those are two huge. Yeah, with Tony. And teach him about some things that some people believe.
You would have been on you would have had the pugs on the Ark.
Honestly, I think pugs are like 6,000 years old. Actually, I don't know how good our time is. Like, I'm thinking in like hundreds of years, but 6,000, maybe the Earth is 6,000 years old.
Laura.
I'm joking. I keyed.
I think 6,000 years ago, Mesopotamia.
Like, okay, so they really just believe that God created everything in 6 days and then suddenly we were in Mesopotamia.
6,000 years ago.
The Tigris and Euphrates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that.
Sumer,
fucking classic.
Gilgamesh. That was like the age of Gilgamesh.
Totally. They're obsessed with Gilgamesh.
Wow. Anyway.
So we have a lot to learn.
Look forward to, hopefully this will be a good season. The episode was a little bit of a slump, but you know what? We'll take it because it's fresh.
Because next week we get to go to Mary's church, I think.
Yeah.
And that will be an eye-opening. Eye-opening moment.
Anyway, I hope everyone has a good Thanksgiving week. Please be safe.
Be safe. Eat a lot of food. The only thing that Thanksgiving's really good for is eating. So just do that and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And follow Carrie at eCarrieO.
Follow Lars at LarsMarie.com. At Lars Marie.
And you can get bonus episodes at patreon.com/sexyuniquepodcast. And with that, I bid you all farewell. Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine? That's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended this unique 3-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement, unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use the code SEXYUNIQUE at checkout to save an additional 10% off their Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.